This is a test. For the next 60 seconds, this station will conduct a test of the emergency broadcast system. This is only a test.
The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Look, you can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious! That ball was on the line! Chalk flew up!
Welcome to This Week in Tennis. Welcome to This Week in Tennis. That was Kansas. Play the game tonight. It is a Friday afternoon, June the 28th, 2013. My name is Phil Nasons, and I'd like to welcome you to the weekly radio program known as This Week in Tennis. By way of introduction, I am the resident tennis professional at the beautiful Corfu Holiday Palace in Corfu, Greece. I've been here for 11 years as of next week. Full stop. Year-round, and if you'd like to come here to have a tennis holiday, by all means, contact me at philnasons.com, and we'll get you rolling. I'll tell you what, there's some crazy stuff happening down at the All England Club this past week. If you are a gambler, you probably got hosed. There's no question about it. And here to talk all about it tonight with me from the grand country of Scotland, please welcome Craig Doyle from CraigDoylePhotography.com. Craig, what's up, dude? How are you tonight?
I am absolutely fantastic tonight, Phil. Unfortunately, I'm not broadcasting live from my regular location, but, you know, we'll make do in the field, as they say, in the radio business. And I'm really looking forward to talking Wimbledon with you tonight.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what. You know, opening day, I picked 20 matches. And 19 of them worked, and one didn't. And it was crazy, because my friend and I do it together. We bet together, right? And he goes to his laptop about 10 o'clock Monday night, and he sees all these greens, and he's going, holy cow, Phil nailed them all. Except for one. Rafael Nadal is out after round number one. Unbelievable stuff. He lost to Steve Darcis from Belgium, who later ended up having to withdraw. What did you make of that tennis match, Craig?
Oh, man, Phil, I just, you know, it's one of those things. Even after Nadal losing in the second round last year, you think that's a bit of a freak result. But to come here and lose in the first round this year is absolutely astonishing. And, you know, last year you would say Lucas Ozal, he's got a little bit of height about him. He's got the big serve. He's got a few assets that would, you would say make him a potential danger on the grass court to even a top player. But Steve Darcis, you know, he's not a big tall guy. He's not hitting big shots. He's not hitting a lot of winners. He basically just outplayed Nadal. And it was absolutely, you know, it was almost a freak event, something you think just shouldn't happen. And it did. And I think a lot of people, they really questioned the preparation Nadal put into the tournament, the application he had coming into Wimbledon. But, you know, a couple of days later, we may look back on that and change our mind. Our opinion on Nadal may change with what's happened since then.
A lot's happened since then. I'm telling you what, they dropped like flies around there this week, didn't they?
They did. I mean, Wednesday, day three at the championships was absolutely unbelievable. The number of withdrawals, the number of top players losing, players slipping on the court and picking up injuries. It's been an absolutely unpredictable week at the championships. It's something, you know, even in my time watching, I just can't think of any other sort of championships like this.
No, I can't remember anything like this. How do you, when you look at this, my goodness, we had this quarter. Now, last week, we didn't have the luxury of having the draw in front of us. But one of the things we speculated on was a Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal quarter. It ended up happening. I'm sure Novak Djokovic did a happy dance when he saw that. And now both of them are out. Federer and Nadal both are toast at the championships. And that's amazing. When you think about this, think about it like this. Roger Federer, 38 straight Grand Slams. Was it 38, I think? 38 Grand Slams where he's made it to the quarters, except for this one. Straight. And now neither of them are there. What does that do to the tournament?
It actually, in a strange way, it's turned the tournament on its head, because when I saw the draw on Friday, I thought that bottom half is absolutely stacked with potential big matches. You know, you mentioned Roger Federer against Rafael Nadal. And then there was the potential of Andy Murray against Joe Wilfried Tsonga. And before that, Tsonga versus Marin Cilic looked like a great fourth round match. And all of a sudden, you've got Tsonga had to retire with injury. Cilic, he couldn't even take to the court due to injury. You've got Federer losing to Stachowski, Nadal losing to Darcis. That's four top guys have been removed from this bottom half of the draw. I mean, Andy Murray must be scratching his head and thinking, where's the competition gone? Because these are the guys that Andy Murray would be expecting to face from the quarterfinals onwards, and they've all vanished. So suddenly you now look at the top half of the draw with Djokovic, Berdych, David Ferrer, who will go to number three in the world after Wimbledon. I mean, that's a career high for David Ferrer at 31 years of age. And you also have Juan Martín Del Potro. And this is, you know, this is the side of the draw that people are looking at and saying, well, the best players are now on the top half of the draw. All these guys that have been eliminated from the bottom half, it suddenly looks like the the doors are opening for Murray to advance. And then the top half of the draw suddenly looks like it's going to be a lot more competitive.
Yeah, it's definitely crazy. And there's been some surprises, too. You know, look at Bernie Tomic. That's a surprise, isn't it? Now, he has a third-round match with Richard Gasquet. But Bernie Tomic has made some news this week as well. You know, he's appealing the ATP's ruling that his father be banned from all ATP tournaments. The ITF has kicked in and banned and barred his father from Grand Slams and being on the property, at least. What do you make of that? I guess, you know, it makes sense in a way. It's still his dad, right?
Yeah, it's still his dad. But if you look at it, and certainly from the perspective of Roland Garros and the championships and the sort of audience that these events bring in, there's no way that the ITF is going to allow a guy like John Tomic, who seems to be a rather unpredictable and volatile individual, to be on site at these events. I mean, they don't want to take the chance of having this guy on site in case, you know, he causes an incident. And yeah, it's quite strange, but you just mentioned that Bernie's in the third round against Richard Gasquet. His father's not been there. He seems to be playing quite well on the grass without his father bearing down on him from the stands, you know? So, you know, maybe Bernie might want to reevaluate in a couple of weeks' time when Wimbledon's over, and, you know, he may want to say to himself, yeah, I played quite well without my father out there, and maybe it's better not to have the old man sitting in the stand offering advice, shouting and bawling after the matches. Just, you know, if he's not on site, I play better tennis. But we'll keep tabs on Bernie. We'll see if he can get past Richard Gasquet on Saturday. And if he can get into the second week, let's see how Bernie does.
Yeah, that's right. And I think he can get past Gasquet. He's serving pretty well right now, isn't he? He's really taking care of business. He cracked James Blake. But that wasn't a surprise. It was that first round match where he really took care of business. He knocked out Sam Querrey, someone we thought would do quite well here, at least for the first two or three rounds. The sky's the limit, young Bernie. Take care of it. Take advantage of it. I hope he does, really. Another match that's interesting to me is Kevin Anderson and Tomas Berdych. That's a third-round match being played, I believe, on Saturday. I like Kevin Anderson here, in a way.
I'd love to agree with you, Phil, but Big Kev seems to draw Tomas Berdych so frequently. And Berdych just seems to give the guy nightmares. You know, he hits so flat on the grass, it's going to be even worse than the clay. But Berdych just seems to be able to neutralize the Anderson game, which is it's a bit of a shame, because I think if Kevin got a few decent draws, I actually think he'd be top 20 material. You know, he's been in and around the top 30, but I think he's got the game to go better than that. A couple of decent draws, a little bit of luck on his part, and maybe he can go a little bit higher than he has done on the tour previously. But I'm a big fan of Berdych at the minute. I think he's sorted his game out. I don't believe he's going to be a winner this week. I don't even believe he's going to be a finalist, but I think he's going to have too much for Kevin Anderson in this next third-round match on Saturday.
Yeah, you're probably right, but the way the grass is playing and the complaints and people falling down and getting injured, Tomas Berdych isn't exactly the best mover, though, is he?
No, Tommy's, he's not really renowned for his movement on the court. You know, he's no Andy Murray, he's no Novak Djokovic. He's not going to get around that court quite like they are. He's not going to get the same sort of court coverage. And if he does push it a little bit, you know, he could be the next guy that becomes a victim of this slip-in that we're seeing on court at the minute from these heavy-footed athletes who, you know, perhaps don't move quite as well as the top players. And I think that will be his downfall. And in the same section of the draw as Djokovic, movement's key. You can't beat Djokovic by standing still. You've got to match his movements. I would hit him, and I just don't see that coming from Tomas Berdych this week.
Yeah, that might be correct. It ought to be an interesting match, though. But I guess the money, we should probably just stick with Berdych against Anderson. I think you're right. The other matchup that's appealing to me from a gambling standpoint is Kei Nishikori taking on Andreas Seppi. Now, logic states Nishikori hammers Seppi. Seppi's not the best grass court player around, but sometimes you throw logic out the window when you're talking about an experienced guy like Seppi, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's an Italian, and traditionally the Italians prefer to play on the clay than they do on the grass. They're not big into this low bounce, fast speed courts. And I think Seppi was quite fortunate. He was playing against, if memory serves, Lodzo or someone like that this morning, who pulled out, which has allowed him to get to this stage. I like Kei Nishikori. I really do. I mean, he's just hovering outside the top 10 at the minute. He's really pushed his way up the rankings. He plays a sort of defensive brand of tennis. He's, you know, interesting to watch, would be the way I'd put it. He plays a very unconventional style of tennis that is quite attractive to watch. He's going to work hard. And I think he'll make Seppi work hard. He'll make him play one more shot. And, you know, I'd like to agree with you on this one as well. I really like Kei Nishikori here. I'd like to see him in the second week. And I think he will be here come the second week.
He definitely could be. I have to agree. I'm taking Nishikori on that one. Juan Martín Del Potro. This is an intriguing situation because he's not exactly the best low ball hitter around. He likes the ball to sit up and pound the crap out of it. He's found himself in the third round. What do you make of this? Because he needs to move and he needs the ball up. And those are two things that seem to not be happening this year at the championships, correct?
Yeah, Juan Martín's not got the best record at the championships. I mean, you look back over his record, and last year he got absolutely pounded by David Ferrer in straight sets, and that was a bit of a shock to quite a lot of people. He had a good Olympic experience on these courts. He picked up the bronze medal, pushed Roger Federer really close. So I'm in two minds about Juan Martín Del Potro. He perhaps has learned from the Olympic experience what it takes to have success on the grass. And if he has, can he replicate that success if he gets to the semifinals and take out Djokovic again? Well, that would be a big ask, I think. You know, Djokovic seems to be playing well. We're talking best of five sets this time. It would be a real big ask for Del Potro to do that. I think, you know, I tend to favour your opinion. He's a big guy. I mean, he's a tall guy. Getting down low to this ball, hitting it with topspin, that's not really his game. He likes to sit back behind that baseline and really thunder through the ball. I just don't see too many guys giving him that opportunity. The likes of a Djokovic, etc., they're not going to give him that sort of opportunity. They're going to hit the ball flat. They're going to take the time away from him. And I think he might struggle a little bit in the later stages of the tournament.
Yeah, that makes sense, I think. Sure, but I'll tell you what, it's an intriguing opportunity to see Juan Martín Del Potro, Kei Nishikori's round of 16. That ought to be interesting, to say the least. Okay, you know, the lower half, we talked about Rafael Nadal. I'm so pissed at this guy right now, it's not even funny. I mean, you screwed up my freaking day. Oh, Maron, when I saw all that green, yippee, I'm thinking. But anyway, enough of that. This is part of the bit. This part of the bit, right, Craig? You win some, you lose some. Anyway, Benoit Paire is still around. I kind of figured he would be. And he's taking on the Polish prince, Lukasz Kubat from Poland. What do you like in that one?
Yeah, I had a quick look at Kubat. If anyone's unaware, I was actually down Monday at the championships on the opening day. And I had center court tickets, but I had a good walk around the outside and had a look at some of these, you know, rising stars and names you might not hear of too often. And I've actually got a photo gallery up, and Lukasz Kubat's one of the guys I got a good look at. Interesting player, but, you know, he doesn't have all that many assets that stand out. You know, these guys that are dangerous on the grass, they tend to have a big forehand or a big serve. And Kubat's not got that for me. On the other hand, Jerzy Janowicz, he certainly does have that. And we're talking real incentive here, because this quarter of the draw has had Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer removed. So we have a stack load of guys left who potentially could have a semi-final berth to play for at Wimbledon. So it's going to be a real case of who could step up to the mark and stake the claim on that semi-final spot. And I really like Jerzy Janowicz. The serve, the big hitting forehand, he's got the game for it. He's the only thing that goes against him, in my opinion, is the temperament. If things aren't going his way, if someone's frustrating him, you know, he'll smash up a racket, he'll smash up a chair. And, you know, at the top level, when you start to see that and you start to see you're getting to your opponent, it's difficult to come back when your opponent suddenly knows how to press home the advantage. But, you know, I like Janowicz. I think he's got like a real good shot here at getting to the semifinals.
Jerzy Janowicz, baby. I like that name. He's got a good shot. Well, I'll tell you what, because he's got the only thing standing in his way, really. And here's a guy I liked, and you didn't like him so much when we were talking privately about this, but Jürgen Melzer's playing pretty good, too. I thought he would.
You know, I've been saying for a few years, Jürgen's kind of past it. I don't know if he's got the motivation to keep charging into these draws and going deep into the second week. He plays a little bit of doubles. He plays a little bit of mixed as well, which kind of goes against his singles game. But, you know, if you're there and you see guys like Federer and Nadal suddenly disappearing from your route forward, I think that's a massive motivational boost to anyone. Meltzer, you know, he might tap into a little bit of that doubles experience. You might see him playing a little bit of the serve and volley, which just seems to be serving a lot of guys quite well this week. And it, you know, with the doubles experience, he volleys real well. You know, what's to say he can't have a good day on serve, take a few players out? You know, Jürgen Melzer could be in a Wimbledon semi-final come this time next week, you know. It's kind of crazy to think of it, but it's certainly a possibility.
It certainly is. But he takes on Sergei Stakhovsky of the Twitter fame. Oh, boy, I hope he leaves his phone in the locker room. Good Lord. I'll tell you what, I like Melzer, but I think Janowicz is going to take care of him at the end of the day. And I'll tell you what, it wouldn't surprise me to see either Janowicz or Benoit Paire, two of my guys. One of those two will be in the semis. The bottom half of the draw, if you're Andy Murray right now, you probably are just thanking whoever his higher power is, because he's got to be the happiest guy in England right now, don't you think?
Yeah, he's seen, you know, four big names move from the draw. And I'm not saying that Tsonga would have beaten him, because he's got an 8-1 record in his favor against Tsonga, including four victories on grass. He's got a 9-1 record against Marin Cilic. So I think he could have taken either of those guys out. I think this year he probably would have taken Federer out. But, you know, that's hypothetical. I don't know that. I'm just going on what I've seen, but... You know, Andy Murray probably looks at the draw now, and he'll not be getting carried away, just like Novak Djokovic hasn't gotten carried away with his draw. He'll be taking it one game at a time, one match at a time. And, you know, if he gets to the second week and the opponents aren't quite the quality of Nadal and Federer or Tsonga and Cilic, you know, I think he'll be really happy with that. I think he'll feel more comfortable against guys he knows he can dictate the play against. He's not going to have to play as defensive as he might do against a Tsonga on serve. So, you know, Andy Murray is going to be really, really happy to see a lot of these names disappearing. He'll hope to spend a lot less time on court. And, you know, no one's putting his name in the semifinals or the final yet, because anything can happen in tennis, as we've quite seen this week. But it would be difficult to say that Andy Murray is not happy with his draw.
He's happier than a pig in doo-doo, because here's the deal. He's got a bunch of clay quarters and maybe Mikhail Yuzhny in his way from the semifinals. You got to love it if you're Andy Murray. You got to love it. Now, we didn't cover the top half very well. I never seem to talk about Djokovic much. Maybe because I'm trying to be nice and whatever. But Novak's up there. He's got a... You know what? He has an interesting little quarter there. Because a guy that you talked about last week, Feliciano Lopez, is playing awfully well. And that round of 16 matchup, it looks like it could happen. Can Lopez give Djokovic fits on the grass?
You know, a lot of people would discount Lopez. I mean, I think he's already had one sort of guy retire on him. But no, Lopez is interesting for me because he's not the typical Spanish player. He, you know, has a big serve. And he's actually got a game that's really suited to playing on grass. And if he comes out and has a day where his service first serve percentage is 70%, then it's very difficult for even a great returner like Djokovic to get a look in. Because if he's getting 7 out of 10 serves in, and Djokovic, as one of the best returners ever, not just in the world at the minute, he's not going to get a lot of first serve points off Lopez if he's got a high serve percentage. There's always a danger on the grass, a guy like Lopez. If he has his day, he could always be unstoppable. So it'll be interesting to see how a match like that goes. Can Djokovic get enough balls back into court to frustrate Lopez? You know, probably not. You saw it at Queens a few weeks ago when Songa took the first set against Murray. He had a ridiculous serve percentage in that first set, but it was stopping Murray getting into games. And it's the same thing all over Wimbledon. These big guys, they can cause a problem to the top seeds if they keep getting the serve in. The problem is, you've got to maintain that for three sets. And I think that's where someone like Djokovic, someone like Murray, or even like David Ferrer, they come into their own because these guys get the ball back over three sets because sustaining that level over three sets of tennis minimum is very difficult. So Lopez, for me, he would have to have a real good day. He'd have to have three great sets to see someone like Djokovic off. I think it'll be real difficult for him to do that, but I think he can maybe take a couple of sets and put a little bit of a scare on Djokovic, but I think Novak would come through that one.
Yeah, I believe you too. I have to agree. You know, the only thing that's probably standing in Djokovic's way from making the semis is Tomas Berdych, and I still don't think Berdych is going to step up and really pop a kid like Djokovic. I look for Djokovic to make it to the final. I look for Andy Murray to be in the final. And I'm taking Andy Murray. I'm staying with Andy Murray. I think Andy Murray is going to have just the time of his life this week at the championships. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, last week we were talking about the possibilities of Nadal and Federer and where these guys would land in the draw. But, you know, it's kind of become a bit irrelevant. On one side, you've got Djokovic, who is clearly the best player in the world at the moment. On the other side, you've got Andy Murray, and I don't think there's another top 10 player on his side of the draw at the moment. I think he's kind of gotten a little fortunate that all the top 10 players have disappeared, or, you know, the ones that would give him a potentially good game. So I can see a Djokovic-Murray final. And if Djokovic has any difficulties getting there against Ferrer or Del Potro, potentially, I think, you know, Murray could pretty much benefit from the big names dropping out of the draw, and this could be Murray's year.
Yep, I happen to agree with you. Anyway, we're going to take a break, and when we return, we're going to take a look at all the drama on the ladies' side of things at the championships. You're listening to This Week in Tennis on Max Sports Channel.
TalkSuperstation.com.
That's right, the superstation of talk.
Talking to you each and every day.
We have a lot to talk about.
Monday.
Government is not the answer. Elf is the answer.
Hey, guys, I'm here.
Tuesday.
The Yankees are always good.
We are going to go for old-timers now.
Well, I think I feel. I'm a Mets fan. We have clothespin day.
Wednesday.
You and I are staying put.
Thank goodness, because I have no socks on, and staying put is what I need to do.
Thursday.
I would love Martin to get Sheen actually decided to run for president. I would vote for him.
Friday.
You know how hard it is to get a topic not about sports on ESPN Radio? It's about as hard as me introducing sports on this show.
Saturday.
It's time to party.
And Sunday.
How can we respect anyone in Washington, D.C.?
Every day, we talk to you.
Sit back and enjoy this.
Talk Superstation.
I'm on the air.
.com.
I am
Talk spoken here.
For you, the listeners of This Week in Tennis, Audible.com is offering you a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I'd personally like to recommend Tim Galloway's book, The Inner Game of Tennis. And you can get this book or any other of over 100,000 titles, all for free, simply by trying audible.com. To download your free audiobook today, please go to audibletrial.com/flashtennis. Again, that's audibletrial.com/flashtennis and get your free audiobook today. Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show. Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination. Welcome back to This Week in Tennis. It is Friday afternoon, June the 28th, 2013. And we are talking the championships. We just finished up the men's side of things, and now we're on to the ladies. My, oh my, what drama we have there. And it always seems to, or these days, it seems to revolve around three players. Victoria Azarenka, Serena Williams, and Maria Sharapova. And none of it has to do with tennis, does it?
No, it certainly doesn't. If this week's anything to go by, I mean, Victoria Azarenka seems to be able to create her own dramas out of absolutely nothing. She seems to have a skill for attracting media attention, potentially unwanted media attention, out of absolutely nothing. Whereas this week we've had a little bit of spice between Serena Williams and Maria Sharapova, a little added extra, but you know, that's all off-court stuff. On-court, there's one dominant girl, and she's the one that remains in the tournament.
Yeah, we're talking to, when we talk about the drama off the court, we're referring to an article written by on Rolling Stone. It's online, so you can find it at rollingstone.com. Where Serena was interviewed, and she made a reference to a top five girl who's in love and in love with a guy with a black heart and blah, blah, blah. And the reporter put his own little thought in there, speculating that it was Maria Sharapova. And of course, Maria decided, hey, I'm going to fight back, which is what they do, and said, hey, look, I'm not dating someone who's married with kids who's now getting a divorce. And the shots keep getting fired, man. I'll tell you what, that's the only fireworks you're going to see between Serena and Maria, I'm afraid to say. Because reality is this, Maria Sharapova, and she's, by the way, out of this tournament conveniently, has not defeated Serena Williams in 9 years. I didn't realize it's been that long. Good Lord. So it's cool that they're fighting in the press, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's the only place they're going to have a fair contest, because on the court, it's not a contest. It's not been a contest, as you said, for, you know, 9 years or whatever. And, you know, this is the top end of the rankings, and it shows you the dominance that Serena Williams has held over the WTA for the last year. She's untouchable. Azarenka's come closer, but Sharapova just can't beat her. And, you know, I think that maybe stings Maria Sharapova a little bit, that she just can't get close to Williams on the court. So this opportunity to have a dig at it off the court, maybe play a little psychological warfare with Serena Williams, see if she can unstable the world number one. Maybe that's in her head that this is the way she's going to get the next victory over her. Unfortunately, I think Sharapova took her eye off the bottle this week, and that's cost her badly. The defeat in the second round, she's out of the tournament, and she's not got a chance at cracking the Serena Williams code next Saturday. It's going to be someone else who gets that opportunity, assuming Serena reaches the final.
Yeah, but to be fair, though, I think Serena takes shots at Maria because Maria makes more money than she does. I think there's a fair give and take there. You know, I think that Serena is a little bit jealous, too, that Maria makes all that money. Even though Maria's not as good as her, it is what it is. But the story of the tournament so far is Kimiko Date Krum, and she has the daunting task at age 42 to take on Serena Williams in the third round. And now one of my picks on Monday was Kimiko Date Krum. And my friend looked at me like I was crazy. And had Nadal would have cracked, we would have been rolling all the way to the bank. Kimiko Date, does she got a shot here?
No, she doesn't. I mean, even at 42 years old and her unbelievable fitness, I don't think there's many women on the tour, if we're going to be honest with each other here, that can beat Serena Williams. I mean, even if Serena has a bad day, you're talking about having to be in the top 7 or 8 players in the world to beat her on a bad day for her. She comes out on this grass and it's going to amplify the power of the ball with the pace and the speed of the courts and the low bounce. And it just doesn't stack up well for Daddy Krum. But let's take this moment here to acknowledge what this Japanese woman's done. I mean, 42 years old, she took a little time off the tour, she's come back, she's hanging with girls in this tournament. I think I read some ridiculous stat this morning that there are 59 entrants out of the 128 girls in the draw who weren't born when Daddy Krum first appeared at Wimbledon. So that's staggering. You know, this girl was at Wimbledon before 59 of these girls who are playing against her this year were even born. And to have that longevity and that fitness, it's fantastic. It's what a story. A fabulous story. And that's what Wimbledon's all about, you know. It's not just about who wins. I mean, you know, that's the most important thing, of course. But, you know, it's a time to look at some of the fantastic stories on the tour, acknowledge a few of these players that we don't look at every single week. And, you know, I think we've got to give great credit to Daddy Krum, the example she sets to other women everywhere, and, you know, how she's kept going on the tour. It's absolutely brilliant. But for me, against Serena Williams, no, unfortunately not. You know, it would be a bit of a dream, I think.
You know what was funny about all this? About 22 years ago when Kimiko Date first came out there, I remember reading an interview where she, where she said that she's actually left-handed, but because it's unladylike in Japan to play left-handed, they made her play right-handed. Good God, I wonder what she'd be like left-handed. But anyway, yeah, I have to agree with you. I don't think she has much of a shot with Serena, but then again, you never know. This is where we talked about this last week, is that first 2 or 3 rounds, that's when, if you're going to get Serena Williams, that's where you get her. I don't know, boy, that's a long shot there, though. If you got a lot of money and you're not afraid to lose, I'd probably do it. I think I'd pull the trigger, because you know me, Craig, I put some upsets this past week, and I was pretty thrilled with it. Let me see, Samantha Stosur's playing Lisicki. That should be a Stosur thing. We don't even have to get into that nonsense. Here's what. What's that?
I think we do. I think we've got a little interest in that match because Sabine Lisicki, effectively over here, she's like one of her own. I mean, they took to her a few years ago when she beat Sharapova. And it is just in this country. I mean, Lisicki just can't seem to get things going on the hard courts or on the clay. But over here, I don't know if it's just the fact that she's this little blonde thing from Germany, and the crowd love the way, you know, she looks in their big power game and stuff, and the underdog thing. But the Wimbledon crowd's really taken to this little German girl, and you know, I think she'll have the full crowd behind her against Stoser. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's an upset there and Lisicki goes through. It might not be in terms of the form book. It might not be in running with the form. But Lisicki seems to bring her A-game at Wimbledon. And I think with the crowd behind her, and she knows she's got the crowd behind her, if they get put on one of these sort of bigger courts, I think it could be a really, really interesting game.
Okay. There, we did it. Because I think Stoser's going to mop her up. But that's just me. I'm really not that interested in that one. This is one that I'm interested in. Is Madison Keys has found her way in the third round, and she takes on Aggie Radwanska. Madison Keys. People are talking about her. They're talking about her more than they're talking about Sloane Stephens, who we will get into in a moment. But Keys, does she have a shot with Radwanska?
I'd like to think so. I'd like to think she could put together enough attacking shots to trouble Radwanska, especially, you know, using the grass to their advantage, using the pace of the courts. But, you know, I watched a little bit of Radwanska earlier on against Mathilde Johansson from France, and boy, did Radwanska look good. She looks sharp. She looks quick. She's picking her shots nicely. And the one thing about Radwanska is she plays a lot of safe shots. She reminds me a lot of Andy Murray 4 or 5 years ago, where she'll not hit winners, but she'll make you keep playing an extra shot, play another shot, play another shot, play another shot, and then, you know, eventually you'll hit the net or you'll hit out. This is going to be a good match. Keys is one that we're all looking at for the future. I definitely think that 5 years' time, Madison Keys is going to be a lot bigger name than she is at the moment. She'll be a household name. In households where, you know, tennis isn't their first sport, people will know who Madison Keys is. Right now, I fancy Radwanska. I think her defense has been so good thus far that I think she'll hold out Keys and advance to the fourth round.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you because, you know, quite frankly, what you said is correct. She likes to play that extra ball. And the way the courts are playing, with all the slip sliding everyone's doing, that's not a bad strategy. And I think Radwanska is just going to bury her. There's really not much else in the top half here that's interesting to me, but the bottom half of the draw, and please folks, don't write to me and tell me I'm stupid because I don't think Sloane Stephens is all that, or I don't know anything about tennis because I think Sloane Stephens is not all that. Please don't do that. I tell you what you do. Get on a plane, come to Corfu, we'll come out of the court, and then you tell me afterwards that I don't know what I'm talking about. That's what where the rubber will meet the road. But Sloane Stephens has taken on this young lady named Setkovska in the third round. This looks like an opportunity for Sloane Stephens to find her way in the quarterfinals of Wimbledon, correct?
Yeah, I mean, Sloane's had a really tough draw if you look at it. She played Jamie Hampton in the first round, and I caught a bit of that match live on Monday. I stood and watched for about 20 minutes. I mean, Jamie Hampton's hot stuff at the moment. She's playing some fantastic tennis. Sloane did real well to beat her. And then, you know, to be joined in the second round against Andrea Petkovic. Petkovic is former top 10 player. Sure, she's had a bad couple of years with some really horrific injuries, and she's still working her way back up the rankings, trying to get her feel for the game again. But she pushed Sloane right to the limit. They went into overtime, if you will, in the third set. And, you know, Sloane pulled out the victory. But I think it's been a real good test of Sloane's character. Can she do it against these big names? And she's done real well so far. And I think, you know, Sloane's going to make the quarterfinals. She's been tested. She's shown her pedigree. And this is probably her best opportunity of her young career thus far to lay down another marker. Certainly after the Australian Open, the opinion of Sloane was that she might rise up the rankings real quickly. That's not quite happened. She's not been as dominant as people had hoped she would be. Perhaps she hasn't taken to the clay quite as well as people thought, and she didn't have good tournaments in the hard court after the Australian, but she started to set things right again. She had a little bit bad PR with the Serena Williams thing, and I think that could have derailed her, but she's done well. I think she's maybe galvanized herself a little bit after that. It's worked in her favor, and this could be her opportunity to lay down a real good marker. So, you know, fingers crossed for Sloan, because she's still a young girl, you know, 20 years old. And, you know, you don't want to be piling the pressure on a young girl's shoulders at that age, especially, you know, when she's got such a big future ahead of her, such potential. So let's sit back, let's enjoy it, and let's see if she can put herself in the quarterfinals at Wimbledon. It'd be a real achievement if she could, I think. So, I like her. I think she will. So fingers crossed on that one.
Okay, that's fair enough. You know, I'm just of the opinion that she hasn't done enough yet for me to get excited.
That's I agree. You know, a lot of people get carried away. Someone has a good tournament to get to a semi-final or whatever. And then, you know, people are, next big thing, has to be next big thing. She's going to dominate the tour from here, or he's going to, you know, win title after title. No, you know, you've got to do it consistently. You know, everyone can have a good week. Everyone could have a good fortnight. But let's take our time. You know, we've seen what's happening at the moment with Milos Raonic. You know, he's surged up the rankings. At the moment, he's really struggling. So let's not get carried away when someone does a little bit good on the tour. Let's take our time. Let's see where they are in 6 months. And if Sloan has a good tournament here, she can add that to her Australian Open, her US Open from last year. Maybe she can close the year out with another good run in their home tournament in New York at the US Open. And, you know, after that, we might start getting a little bit more excited about Sloan, because she'll be showing consistency. But there's so many people in the media and so many, you know, fans get real carried away when someone shows a little bit of potential. Let's just, you know, relax, chill out, and give Sloan a little bit of time to develop on her own. And I think she will in time, but, you know, 20 years old, still a little bit young. She's got plenty of maturing to do, so let's give her that chance.
Absolutely, and you know what? She's got a pretty good shot at making the final here. You know, when you look at this bottom half of the draw, which has been decimated completely, what do you have? You have Marianne Bartoli against her in the fourth or in the quarter. And then after that, jeez, Maron. There's nothing, really, there's not much here to stand in her way. Petra Kvitova, defending one of the former Wimbledon champions, has a pretty good little shot, too. She takes on Elena Ekaterina Makarova in the third round. Boy, I'll tell you what, Kvitova, ugh, I don't know, man. Makarova's playing pretty well, I think. What do you think about that match?
I think what could be interesting here is that Kvitova did not play a second round match. Her opponent withdrew. And, you know, a lot of people would say that's a huge advantage. But I disagree. I think it's important, even in the early days, to get time on the court, to acclimatize to the surface, to get used to the bounce of the courts, to, you know, to tune your game up. Because when the difficulty steps up and you get an opponent like Makarova, or, you know, someone who is playing pretty good tennis, pretty consistent tennis, you don't want to be coming in there feeling kind of fresh, kind of like the surface is new to you, like you've not had enough time on it. You want to be comfortable from the word go. You can't afford to come out there and go a break behind, two breaks behind early on because you're not used to the bounce or whatever. So I worry for Kvitova here. I mean, she's a good player. She's won this tournament before, but she's had a little bit of difficulty with her form in recent times. She doesn't want to be coming on here against an informed player without having the real feel for the court. So I'm going to mark this one down for an upset.
I don't even think it would be considered an upset, even though the seeding is completely contrary to each other. I think Makarova is going to roll her also. And then you have Carla Suarez Navarro. She's another one that could make it interesting for whoever. Jeez, she's playing pretty good, I think. And then you have another young lady from, I believe, where is she from? From Belgium, Kirsten Flipkens. There's a good shot for her, and Elise Cornet has a good shot. You know what you're going to have here is perhaps a first-time finalist, don't you think? Very good chance of it.
yes, I think there's a real opportunity for one of these girls to put themselves in the final. It depends who wants it most. I mean, these girls should be looking at that draw. They should be talking to their coach and saying, well, you know, Azarenka's gone. Sharapova's gone. There's an opportunity here to really make progress. And a lot of these girls, you know, they're not separated by a lot of points in the rankings, because once you get outside the top 10, 20 players, you get to a Wimbledon semi-final or Wimbledon final, you pick up so many points, you could put your ranking through the roof, and that can make or break a career, you know. You get 1,000 points, 1,200, whatever it is, for reaching the final and not winning. You could put your ranking so far up that you suddenly start getting seated at these big events for the next year. You start picking up extra prize money. You start being able to attend more events, etc. It could really change the career of one of these girls if they could just put together a string of performances here. And I think a lot of coaches are going to be looking at that, looking at the opportunity. And whoever gets their head down, works hardest, refines their game, has a real chance to drastically improve their career off the back of this one tournament.
Sure. And they all have these seeded players who tanked. I mean, fell apart, not tanked. That's a bad word.
I think you've got the wrong term there. It's actually the fault of the grass, according to some of these players.
All right, because they never want to take responsibility, do they? I was going to ask you about this. There's a lot of people complaining about the grass. I saw Johan Kriek on Facebook. He said it's a little slippery, but it is what it is, you know. And what is the story with all this whining about the grass? You were there. You were snapping. What were you thinking? What was your thoughts about that? Are they right?
I captured one slip on the grass. That was Lauren Davis of the United States. And she was wrong-footed. That was all it was. She was wrong-footed and she did the split. I mean, that happens. It's grass. It's a natural surface. That happens when you're wrong-footed. You try to change direction so quickly. What seems to be the problem is that these heavy-footed individuals are taking these huge stride steps like you would take on a hard court, then suddenly trying to change direction and finding that the surface isn't quite as grippy as a hard court. To turn around and say that the grass is a problem itself is ridiculous. I mean, this started on Wednesday when Azarenka withdrew, and, you know, this is a controversial show, so I'm just going to come out and say this, but Azarenka is the queen of excuses, isn't she? I mean, this is a girl that had a bad pedicure and had to withdraw from a match with Serena Williams because of a bad pedicure. So, you know, to be the first one out to point the finger at the grass doesn't surprise me. She's been followed since by Maria Sharapova, who was basically hit off court by an up-and-coming young girl. Sure, she hasn't done much for the last 4 years, but as a 16-year-old, she had potential. She's shown that potential again. She was simply hit off court. That was all there was to it. But Sharapova wants to point to the grass and, you know, give an excuse or justification in her mind for why she didn't win that match. You know, whatever. But, you know, I think it's pretty lame that we've got to point the finger at the grass and say that it's a problem, when various players are just being hit off court and losing. And I know she's not complaining, but a few people have made excuses for the likes of Wozniacki. Well, before she had a slip on grass, she was getting hit off the court as well. So it's to me, there's no problem with the surface. I was there a whole day and I saw one slip. I watched, in total, I got around maybe about 18, 20 matches in total. Watch little bits of it. Players seem to be dealing really well with the surface. No issues from my perspective. The AAOTC have issued a statement saying that the procedure for the grass has been the same as it always has been. I just think, you know, in the early days, the surface is naturally a little bit slippier until it wears down over the course of the tournament. And a few of these players just haven't been applying the correct footwork and have been caught out. And they want to point the finger at the grass for their inabilities to play grass court tennis. It's quite sad, really. You know, learn to play on the grass is what I would say.
Yeah, well, they're going to cry and complain. They're always going to make an excuse. Bottom line is, Sharapov got hit off the court. You're exactly right. All right, you know what, Craig? That's going to wrap it up for today's show, man. Thank you so much for being a part of it.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here again. I've enjoyed Wimbledon this week. I hope everyone else has enjoyed the first few days of the championships. Now, I think we've got a few surprises still to come coming into next week. So I'm really looking forward to joining you next week to have another look at the tournament again.
Yeah, I hope we have a show next week, because next week is the 4th of July. We'll have to discuss that. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoy the championships as much as we have, and I hope that you continue to. And that's going to wrap it up for this Week in Tennis. Until next week, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for taking the time to listen. Thank you for heading over to Max Sports Channels each and every day at 4 p.m. Eastern. Enjoy the tennis.